No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it
good evening? This is United States State Senator Michael Brown, and I want to welcome you to the first show of Shadow Politics, our new grassroots talk show that's coming to you live from America's last colony, the District of Columbia, our nation's capital. This is our first show, as I said, and we're going to try to work out a few of the kinks this week and next week. And we're going to be on every Sunday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 4 o'clock Pacific Time. We want to have people call in so that we can talk about the issues that are important to you. And we're going to do this week and next week. We're going to do a little testing to see how everything works and get a little feedback from you if we can on the show. And then on April 28th, we're going to have a big inaugural show. We're going to have guests on, and we're really going to launch the program then, which is in 2 weeks. You know, we like to do everything in a big way here in Washington, so we can't just have a show. We have to have an inaugural show, and we're going to do that on the 28th. As I said, my name is Michael Brown, and I am the United States Senator from the District of Columbia. I'm elected like all other senators. I got 207,000 votes, in fact, in November, which is more votes than 8 other United States senators. But unlike other United States senators, I don't have a vote in Congress. In fact, Congress doesn't recognize me at all. Only the voters of the District of Columbia do. So we started this talk show with the idea that we would get the word out about the situation in Washington, D.C., and try to get input from people about what we can do to make the citizens of the District of Columbia equal with all other Americans. And when we decided to do that, we also decided that we needed to talk about other issues too, because we think that the situation in the District of Columbia is just one issue of many that needs to be discussed and where we need to develop a dialogue with America. Let me tell you a little bit about shadow senators, which is what they affectionately call me. The shadow senator office is a very old, old office. It goes back to the 1700s in Tennessee, when Tennessee wanted to become part of the United States and become a state. They decided in 1796 to elect two senators and send them to Washington. These two men, William Blount and William Cock, came to Washington and represented Tennessee until Tennessee was admitted as a state, and then they were made actual United States senators with all the privileges of regular senators. Since that worked so well for Tennessee, Michigan, California, Minnesota, Oregon, and Alaska also used the same plan to become states. And in the late 1980s, the voters of the District of Columbia decided to do the same thing, use it what we now call the Tennessee Plan, and they elected two United States senators. The first United States senator that was elected was Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson. I am the third United States senator elected from the District of Columbia. There is another United States senator named Paul Strauss, and the two of us serve the people of the District of Columbia as lobbyists, and we work on federal issues that affect the city. I've created a nonprofit since I was elected in 2006. I've created a nonprofit organization to help students and teachers across America learn about our struggle for statehood. I have a petition online that I'll tell you about in a few minutes that you can sign. I've lobbied on Capitol Hill. I've created several projects that have been aimed at heightening the awareness of America about the disenfranchised status of the people of the District of Columbia. And in fact, in 2008, President Barack Obama said that I've, even without a vote, I've always been an effective advocate for the people of the District of Columbia. So I'm very proud of that, and I try to continue to be an advocate. But as I said, what we really want to do with this show is I want to be an advocate for America. I think there are a lot of people out there that have issues like the District of Columbia's issue that are not getting attention. I think there are a lot of people out there that feel that their voice is not being heard and that Washington doesn't take them seriously. So our attempt on this show is going to be trying to give a voice to the voiceless people of America. And this is your opportunity, America, to call in and talk to an elected representative. You don't get much of a chance to talk to politicians one-on-one, which is too bad. I think that all politicians ought to come on periodically on the radio or on the internet and talk to voters to find out how they really feel and what they really want. So our attempt here at Shadow Politics is going to be to start a grassroots talk show to give you a voice. And what we want more than anything is your input. We want to start a dialogue. We want to know what issues are important to you. I'm going to go on the out and do interviews with people, which we will broadcast on the air. We'll have shows that are aimed at what we consider to be the top issues of the day, things like gun control, immigration, medical marijuana, those issues that you see foreign relations, that you see in the paper all the time. But we also want to know what's important to you. Not only how you feel about the big issues, but what are the little issues that if you could walk up to the Capitol and knock on the door and talk to the Speaker of the House or the leader in the Senate, what would you want to say to these people? So that's what our show is going to attempt to do. And we hope that it'll be interesting, that it will provide a dialogue that we can build on. You know, in Washington, D.C. right now, we have terrible, terrible gridlock. We can't seem to be able to get anything accomplished. Actually, in the last few days, things have loosened up a little bit on issues like immigration and gun control. Both sides are talking to each other, so there's great promise there. But nonetheless, we have become very, very partisan in America, and we want to see what we can do to create a dialogue that will create a consensus for a new direction for America. Where do the people want us to take our country? You know, one of the projects that we'd like to start is we'd like to do a mission statement for America. You know that when Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, that was primarily a mission statement. It said why we were establishing our country and what we expected it to do. We then wrote the Constitution, which is the framework within which we operate. But we want to come up with a people's proclamation on what America, how America should move forward. In order to make the show interesting and not just hear myself talk for an hour every Sunday. I have decided to bring in as my co-host a very dear friend and someone who's very experienced in politics but has a somewhat different perspective than I do. And we hope that this will start a that our conversation with each other will start a conversation between America and shadow politics. I'm about to introduce to you my dear friend, Kathleen Gomez. But let me tell you a few things about Kathleen. Kathleen and I have been friends for very many years. We've worked in politics together for a very long time. She campaigned for President Jimmy Carter. She worked at the Democratic National Committee in Washington, D.C. She's worked for several members of Congress, including Congressman Maddox of Texas and Congresswoman Pat Schroeder of Colorado. She worked for a large trade association and was the administrator for the 1992 Democratic Convention in New York City, where Bill Clinton was first nominated. In addition to that, she was a community activist and organizer in New York City for reduced class size in New York City public schools. But recently, she's moved back to her hometown in Arizona. She's the mother of two boys. I am the godfather of her oldest son. She is the godmother of my youngest daughter. So we've been connected for almost 30 years as best of friends. She's brilliant and insightful, and she has a different opinion than I do. And so we want to have her as a regular on the show so that you can hear, so that, like I said, we can create a dialogue and perhaps draw you into the conversation. So without further delay, let me introduce to you my dear friend, Kathleen Gomez. You there, Kathleen?
Yes, I am, Michael. It's so exciting to be on this show with you, and thank you for that great introduction. I mean, that's wonderful. I know we were best friends, but it's so nice to hear you say so.
I got your check, so I decided to do that.
Thank you. I'm glad I got there. I got it to you in time.
Yeah, I just hope it doesn't bounce at this point.
Well, that's something else to be seen, for sure.
But, you know, Kathleen and I gave you a little bit of Kathleen's resume. And you know, Kathleen and I first started working on the Carter campaign together, and then we worked at the DNC. And we both have a lot of political experience. You can actually go on to the BBS radio website and click on our show, and you'll see my resume. We had a few technical difficulties this week. Our designer got sick, so we didn't get Kathleen's resume up, but it'll be up in the next day or two, and you can go see both resumes and see that we both have a lot of experience. But one thing I'd like to say about Kathleen, and then I'm going to let her talk for a few minutes, is that she's one of the good guys. You know, we worked in politics for a long time together, and Kathleen and I were worker bees. We were the people that got the work done, that put together the conferences, that made the direct mail work, that did the things that needed to be done in politics, and we always took care of the people around us. So we've seen a lot go on over the years, have we not, Kathleen?
We've seen a lot. We've seen a lot of things that you have to wonder about politics sometimes. We've seen people who have really kind of shot into the forefront, but not necessarily the way in which maybe we thought you should do it, which is kind of like the right way, the good way, the moral way. But I must say too about Michael that Michael is a good guy too, and we've always wanted to do the right thing and do it the right way, not try to promote ourselves to get ahead by cheating or lying or manipulating the issue or the cause. And that happens a lot. But there is a lot of people that are involved in politics that are really true believers in wanting to do good for for the United States citizens. And I think a lot of times when I talk to people about, yes, I was in politics and I am, they're kind of like, oh, politics is such an evil kind of career to pursue. And I think there is a lot of that, but I think people don't realize that there are good guys in politics, and they are everywhere. They're in your local city council, and they're representing you in the House. And we have to have that belief that there are good guys who are there fighting for what is the right thing to do.
Well, you know, that's really an important point, that there are a lot of great people in politics that go into it because they want to make a better world. They're not in it for the power. They're not in it for the prestige. They're in it because they love this country or because they love their community and they want to make the world a better place. When I was at the DNC with Kathleen, one of my mentors there left me a saying, and he said, don't ever forget. He left this note on my desk. Don't ever forget that the cream always rises to the top, but so does the scum. And I think there's some truth in that, that really good people that do the right thing get to the place they should be, but very often, unfortunately, so do bad people. So I think democracy works better when there's more of us involved, and so that's what we're going to attempt to do here, is to bring people in so that we can start a dialogue and get people thinking about where our country should go. Kathleen, can you talk for a minute about going back to Douglas and what, I'm sorry, going back to Arizona and what the difference is? You lived in New York City for so many years.
Yes, I had moved from Washington, which I went to school at American University, got a degree in from the School of International Service, and then went to New York, which was always a dream of mine as a little girl growing up on the Mexican border, was to go to a big, you know, city like New York where there's ballet and it never sleeps and there's so much to do. And I was there 20 years and ended up getting divorced. And as in most stories, you know, the power is the person who has their name on the lease. So my ex had his name on the lease and he got to keep the apartment. And so I was really looking at having to spend $8,000 for an apartment in New York. And I thought, gosh, where am I going to go that I can maybe start over without a lot of debt? And I thought of my hometown on the Mexican border. And my father was running for mayor of my hometown. And so I thought, this is great. You know, I've been involved in national politics. Maybe it's time to look at trying to change things in like a little smaller backyard. So I came to Douglas and helped him with his campaign, in which he won with, you know, a huge amount. He's really kind of he was the first Mexican American to be a dentist in the state of Arizona. He was the first of many things, and really one of those good guys who didn't have an agenda other than trying to make Douglas a better place for his community. So I came back here and got a real eye opener. You know, living in a urban community is so different than living in rural America. And I live in rural Arizona and have gotten over the past 4 or 5 years to really feel strongly that one of those voices that are not heard is rural America. We have a saying in Arizona, as Maricopa goes, so does the state, because Maricopa is made up of Phoenix. And Phoenix is made up of so many transients, people from all over other states. They're not born in Arizona. They probably haven't maybe gone to the Grand Canyon, but haven't visited the different rural communities that make Arizona really a very intriguing, interesting place. And so I've gotten really involved. I worked in representing a small hospital, which I think is going to be another great issue that we can talk about, what's happening to rural hospitals in America.
Absolutely.
They're closing left and right. And started to get involved in the Chamber of Commerce. At that time, the whole issue of securing the border became a big deal and has a lot of emotion because people don't understand, maybe in New York City or D.C., that securing the border is a very different issue than immigration. They're totally separate. But in the passion, the heat of Thanes, it gets mixed in. So that was, it was a real eye opener. And I know as we had conversations together when I was telling you things like how people feel about gun control, I mean, the most progressive liberal people here in Arizona do not want gun control, and they have very strong issues and very interesting issues that I don't hear being discussed in D.C. and by the national politicians who, you know, are riding this kind of passionate wave after all the terrible tragedies we've had. So I know that a lot of my friends back east started thinking, my gosh, Kathleen, are you getting a little redneck in you? And I don't think what it is that I'm seeing things in a very different aspect, and I'm trying to understand where they're coming from. I'm for gun control, but as issues have risen, I can understand where they're coming from, and I can understand these issues that they feel so strongly about that the rest of the nation has not picked up on. And we were talking about some of the things we should talk about is also this real growing fear of a distrust of government and how they believe it could become Assyria or it could become one of those kind of governments that could come knock on their door and take their guns away. And we'll, I know, discuss this in later shows, but it kind of really made me wake up to what, how different rural America is. And I think I told you, Mike, I was taking a road trip that went from South Dakota to Texas, kind of going up that breadbasket. And I went through town after town and was really kind of surprised how many of our little towns are kind of just vacuums. You know, the structures there, the little downtown, quaint, beautiful little towns, and really not a lot going in. There's no industry. There's basically cornfields from Texas to South Dakota. And I also was thinking, you know, I was expecting to see a variety of things that are being grown, and it's amazing how corn is what we grow in the United States. And that's like another issue we can talk about. But that's what I'd like to bring to this show, kind of a representation of what rural America thinks.
Well, and I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's kind of it. Just what they think and how different they think than the rest of like the big cities, whether it be San Diego, San Francisco, LA, or Chicago, or New York and D.C.
Well, you know, that's that you bring up a lot of excellent points, and that's really why I wanted so much to have you as a co-host, is because we do get myopic here in Washington, D.C. We don't see what the rest of the country sees. Immigration and protecting the borders and things like that are completely different to us in Washington, D.C., because we have issues that are more immediate to us. And even though we sit here and we write the laws that affect everybody in Arizona and California and North Dakota, we very often, I think, get out of touch with the people that live there. You know, that it's not unusual to have a senator who serves, you know, five consecutive terms, and that's 30 years. That's 30 years away from home. And that's another important aspect of bringing everybody together, that we hope to use Kathleen's expertise on, because, you know, she moved to Washington, D.C. when she was a young woman. She went to college here, then moved to New York, and then moved back home. How long were you out of Arizona, Kathleen?
35 years.
35 years. So, you know, that's the thing. Things change, and all these politicians here in Washington want to tell you that they're connected to the voice of the people. But I can tell you, because I spend a lot of time out there talking to people, that whether that's true or not, people generally feel, or many people feel, that their voices are not heard, and that the people in Washington don't know what's going on with them. So that's a very important perspective, and we hope to bring to this show some input on what we can do to deal with some of these problems. You know, Kathleen brought up gun control, for example. Washington, D.C. has among the toughest gun control laws in America. We recently, a few years ago, had a major Supreme Court decision, the Heller decision, which changed gun laws across the country. It's probably going to have more of an impact on gun laws than any other single court decision in recent memory. So we in Washington want very strict gun laws, but we understand that, or at least I understand, many people across America don't. And what we need to do is we need to come up with a consensus of opinion on what we can do to keep the children of Connecticut safe, for example, but still respect the rights of people across the country who want to bear arms, feel that they have a right to do that under the Second Amendment of the Constitution. And we need to come to some accommodation on both sides so that we can give people the rights they deserve, but still protect the innocent. And I think it's hard to do that in Washington because of the gridlock. So hopefully we'll be able to get some good discussions going on that and immigration and other things. And of course, I'm going to talk now for a minute about my most important issue, and that is equality for the people of the District of Columbia. You know that in D.C., we do not have a voting member in either House of Congress. We do not have the right to control our own tax money. We do not have the right to control our own legal system, and we need to change that. We need to become equal American citizens. We're the only people in the world, we're the only country in the world that denies the citizens of their capital the same rights that everybody else has. And it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous anachronism held over from the time when this country was formed. And we want to get that issue out there. And that will actually be the issue of our inaugural show. And it'll be a recurring issue, although not the only issue we discuss. We want to discuss all these issues. And I just want to throw this out there right now. If you want to learn more about what the situation in the District of Columbia is, you can go to www.statehoodnow.org, and there's a list of the history of the District of Columbia and how we got in this situation. And if you're going to listen to the show on a regular basis, you should go have a look at that. And we'll try to give you other information in advance so that we can have productive shows. We really, really want to make this a productive dialogue. And like I said, the first 2 weeks, Kathleen and I are going to talk, so you get to know us a little bit and get a feel for the show, and we get a feel for what we're doing. But starting the 28th, we want you to call in. So please do on a regular basis. In fact, you can call in anytime, but especially starting the 28th. Is there anything you want to add before we go to a short break?
Yes, one of the things I want people to think about when we talk about statehood, because I lived in D.C. for 10 years, how ridiculous this idea. I think the biggest fear is that D.C. would be seen as a Democratic vote. And that is why there's a gridlock in Congress on the statehood, too. They don't want to give D.C. statehood because they perceive that it would just be a vote towards the Democratic side. To me, to deny people the right to vote based on a fear of how they're going to vote is just something that I can't understand. And maybe that's kind of that fear of government, because government is deciding not to give the people of D.C. a vote because of that fear. Do you agree, Michael?
Yeah, that's absolutely, in my opinion, Kathleen, that is certainly the most important issue that's kept us recently from getting statehood is the fact that it's a partisan issue, and that we face on Capitol Hill great opposition because of the fear of having two more Democratic senators. Well, we're going to take a little break now for a minute or two and bring you some interesting commercials. And I hope you'll take this time to think about some questions. And when we come back, maybe some of you can call in if you're out there.
No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
Welcome back. I'm here with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez. This is United States Senator Michael Brown. And we want you to call in if you're out there. Call in with anything, any kind of question you can think of, especially if it does, if it deals with politics, even if it doesn't deal with politics. If you want a good spaghetti recipe or something, maybe we can help you out. Kathleen's a pretty good cook. I don't know about me. But
I can make great tacos. So anybody wants to know how to make tacos, I can do that.
Like, that's really tough, right? Yeah.
It's tough.
I've had her tacos. They're very, very good. I'm just teasing her. The toll-free number is 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471. Or you can call in directly at 503-413-9537. Either one of those lines, or you can Skype. You can use your Skype and go to BBS Radio 2, and that will come directly to us. So if you're out there and you have a question, please call in. We'd love to answer it. Just call in and tell us how you think we're doing. We're anxious to talk to America. Kathleen?
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to I'm interested in talking about is this whole gridlock where nowadays, if you have a difference of opinion, you can't talk to someone who may think differently than you. And when you were talking about my time on the Hill, I did work for a couple of congressmen from Texas and worked for about 5 years for Congresswoman Schroeder. And there was one thing that happened there that I didn't realize would become like something that would become extinct in the future. I had dealt a lot with issues. So I had a very good friend who worked for the Republican National Committee. And her and I were probably as opposite as you could get on things like all kinds of issues, the military, abortion, women's rights. But we loved the same kind of music. So we would have, during the day, you know, we would be on the different sides of the aisle. But at night, we would, I guess you could say, break bread together. We'd go listen to some great music at the 9:30 club. We loved to dance. So we had this sense of respect for one another, knowing we weren't going to change each other's minds, but we would listen to each other during the day and still be friends at the end of the day when we went to have dinner and listen to music, and that kind of respect. And nowadays, that's kind of gone. I mean, it's kind of like, hey, if you don't like what I say, then you're an idiot and I'm not going to talk with you. And we become so polarized that there's no compromise and no action to be able to reach each other in the middle of the road and say, okay, I'll give, you give. Now we'll be able to have something that everyone can work with. And I would love people to be able to call in and say why they think this happened and how we can get back to the respect that we used to have. Well, you know, we can have different opinions, but we can still be friends and break some bread together and drink some wine and make the United States, you know, it still is a great place, but now we don't talk to each other like we used to. And I think that's what our show is trying to do, is trying to listen to others' opinion, even if it's very, very far different from ours. But at the end of the conversation, try to understand where that person is coming from and respect that, and then try to figure out how we can work together.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely essential. And it's, you know, it's funny that you should mention, you know, that you had this friend at the RDC, all that. That's a very typical situation in Washington because we both work, you know, we all work for different organizations and on different sides. And I think we accept it, a little more sometimes maybe than people across America, because it's part of our culture here in the District of Columbia. You know, it's not unusual, for example, for a law firm, to work for both Republicans and Democrats. They'll have some people in the firm that work for Republicans and some that work for Democrats. And hopefully in the upcoming weeks, we'll have some of those people. We'll have some of the Republicans and the Democrats on the show, and liberals and conservatives, so that we can hear what both sides have to say. And that's really the important thing. And we can't stress that enough, I think, that what you're saying, Kathleen, about hearing the other person is really critical. It's not just listening to what they have to say, but actually hearing what they have to say and trying to take the two opposing opinions and reach a consensus somehow. You know, my father used to say, you can't learn anything new from somebody that agrees with you. You can only learn from people that have a different perspective, and you need to embrace that perspective. And that really has been something that's changed in America. It's sad. There used to be a thing, you know, that I call being an American. There were just these basic principles that we all agreed on, and I think some of them are still out there. You know, one thing that I hope you'll talk about in the upcoming weeks, Kathleen lived in New York City during 9/11. She was there in the middle of the whole thing. She watched the Twin Towers collapse from the roof of her building. So, you know, I hope in the coming weeks we'll be able to talk about some of that. But we saw America come together around 9/11. But there's got to be other issues that we can come around together. It can't only just be disaster.
Right, right. And I think that somehow, you know, when I watch, you know, Fox or you know, CNN or whatever, you know, it's amazing how we call each other so many names.
There are.
Good.
Well,
oh,
good.
Great.
Talk to us. Okay, Michael, this is Senator Brown. Thanks for calling in. What can we talk about?
Hey, how you doing, Senator? And hello, Ms. Gomez.
Hi.
Hello. Yeah, what I would like to talk about is there seems to be two United States. You know, you got the United States, District of Columbia, and then you have the United States of America geographically.
Yeah.
So when they say, yeah, it's the law, well, which law are you talking about?
Well,
there
is a, the country was founded on the concept of being two separate and distinct entities, actually, that the Constitution is written so that the federal government, which a lot of people see as the District of Columbia, it's really not, it's Washington, but the federal government and the states are separate, and they have separate powers, and the laws of the states can be different from the laws of the national government as long as they don't violate the Constitution or violate the national laws. And in fact, the Constitution reserves for the states any rights that aren't enumerated to the national government. So I'm a little confused, Michael. What's your concern?
So you said something that I didn't know, and you said the federal government's Washington, D.C., not District of Columbia. That's news.
Right.
That's news. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's news to a lot of people, and it really affects us because there are people here that live in the district who are like doctors and lawyers and plumbers and electricians and just like everybody else in America. And then there's the federal government, and that's a different entity.
And you know, sir, I lived in D.C. In Adams Morgan, which was a Hispanic community, and it's very amazing. People don't really realize that you have the federal government, Congress, you know, the House, the senators, and the representatives, and then you have a city, like a breathing, living city that a lot of people, you know, there's universities, people like are plumbers, electricians. It's like a normal little city, but they do not have any power over what happens to them. For instance, there is a committee in the Senate, Michael, where they decide how much DC can charge for the taxi rides, or whether or not DC can have money. I mean, they decide, okay, DC is going to get this amount of money, like you would have a budget for Chicago or for Douglas. And they rule over DC kind of like a colony, like as Michael calls the show, it's a colony where they don't have the right to vote. I mean, you don't have a senator or a representative to represent your views. So you are kind of at I want to say you're kind of beholden to all these other senators and congressmen that come from other states who decide what's going to happen to the city, to the people who live in the city of D.C.
So yeah. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it answered my question. I was wondering, it seems that votes really don't count. So you got two. What I wanted to talk about is you got two citizens. You got like you're an American citizen or you're a United States citizen. United States Supreme Court has ruled on that there's different citizenships. Like before the Civil War, you were called, what were you called?
Well, you've always been called a citizen. Thomas Jefferson said that it is the single most important title in a democracy. And I think Kathleen and I both agree with that, and that's why we started this show, because we want to hear what the citizen, who is really the backbone of democracy, has to say.
What do you disagree on, you and Gomez, again?
No, I was saying we agree on the fact that citizenship is important and your input is the single most important thing in a democracy.
Yeah.
And Mr. Sir from Arkansas, are you from a rural community?
Well, I was born in Pittsburgh, raised in California, and I've lived out here for 3 years. I'm in the Ozarks. I'm
in the Ozarks.
Mountain home area, Lakeview.
Yeah. Right. Beautiful area.
So, I mean, you know, because when we cast a vote, Senator, it seems to me that there's no way knowing that your vote counted. If there is some kind of sort of, you know, you just get a little ticket.
Well, that's a whole nother issue, and that's a whole nother show. But, yes, the voter fraud is something that happens. Kathleen and I have both seen examples of it. We've both been involved in operations, I'm sure, to keep it from happening. But I can tell you that your vote is important, not only because of, you know, we've seen recently in presidential elections how close they've come. In the election between President Bush and President Gore, for example, only a handful of votes in Florida decided the whole thing. So your vote does count. But it also counts because politicians look at it. So, for example, children, education doesn't get as much funding or as much attention as Social Security does, because old people vote and kids can't vote. And the politicians know that. So they pay attention.
I agree with you on that. Yeah. I think people who are disabled and poor, it's a no-brainer there. I mean, somebody with $80 million is worried about giving away one.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in. We'd like to get
this is your first show, right?
Cause yes, it is.
I'm a regular listener of BBS Radio on a few shows, so I'll start listening to your show.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Because I really want to talk to you about voter absentee ballots and how that contributes to voter fraud. But I would also like to just say, as we leave with you, is that it does count your vote, because usually when you go to vote, you're also voting for other things, like the city council person running for in your hometown,
right.
Or, you know, the local county supervisor. So it is really important, because when you go to vote, you are voting usually more for than just one person.
Great. Okay. Thanks for calling in. Can we get the caller from Florida? Great. Hi, this is Senator Michael Brown and Kathleen Gomez. What kind of question can we answer for you, or what kind of comment do you have?
I have a question, and, you know, I've listened just recently, you know, you talked about voter fraud and all that.
Yep.
We know that's been going on for years.
Yes.
You know, there's many a thing you talked about, the election with Gore and Bush. We know that the votes, when they were recounted by the newspapers, they found out Gore would have won the election. So, you know, we have a big farce that goes along with every election.
Yes, that's true.
That's you know, which we should try to get this cleared up in a handbag, you know, and get it straightened out. It'll never happen. Now I have a big question.
And it goes way back. You're right. I mean, people used to make jokes about the fact that they counted the votes of deceased people in the 1960s in the Kennedy election in Chicago. That used to be a joke, standing joke. Vote early, vote often.
Yeah, they still do. They even talk about in South Carolina. Our deceased people are still on the ballots, still voting, all right?
That's right. I deal a lot with that when my father was running for mayor. It's a small town. You know how small town politics are. But I went and looked at the voters who had voted, and I went to a house that had been abandoned for maybe 20 years, and six people were voting from it. And when I went to the county recorder's office, their thing was, well, you have to prove that these people don't really live there. I said, I'll give you a picture. What can I do? Isn't it your job to make sure that this doesn't happen? And that's, you know, kind of like politics reflects at a very local level, and we all have to get involved. And there's so many people who just feel like, well, it doesn't matter. What does it matter? It does. Everything does matter.
Well, you know, and I'll tell you another just a quick example. When we worked for Jimmy Carter, I worked for a guy who lived in an area of Georgia that was Democratic, and there was one little community that you had to cross a river to get to, and they were Republicans. And every year at election time, the people who were the Democrats who would collect the votes would throw the voting boxes into the river as they came across the bridge. And it was so well known that the Republican Party actually used to go downstream and get the boxes with nets and bring them to the election.
What I just recently heard on the recent presidential election was that the military votes were never counted.
Yes.
That would be a travesty. I mean, I haven't heard that, but I know in Washington, D.C., because we vote a lot of military absentee, that very often they're not reported in the district, and they're not voted. In fact, a man that ran for my office, who ran against my colleague's son, was serving in Iraq, and his name wasn't even on the ballot. His son couldn't vote for him. So that's terrible.
You see, the aspect is that I caught this on a military newspaper called Duffelbag.com, and the aspect is that when the votes that were when they were put into transit to come back to the balloting offices in each state, it was listed on the paperwork as ammunition and got stuck in a warehouse for a couple of months.
Well, that's
and then
terrible.
When they took it out, when they went in to get the ammunition, they found out these were ballots, and they went to ship them back. They even found out that some of the boxes wound up into the ocean when they were transporting the boxes from one ship to another. And then
There are people out there who are calling for national voter legislation just because of this. You know, our earlier caller, we discussed the separation between the state and the federal government. Well, there are federal voting laws, but each state handles its own voting. There's 51 different ways to vote in America. And there are some people that think there should be a uniform way to vote so that we can avoid the kind of things that you're talking about.
I would like to ask the gentleman what you think of this idea, sir. You know, as I'm in this rural community, you know, voter absentee ballot is becoming now the thing that everyone is promoting. But I think it's terrible. It's so easy to commit fraud. And I wonder why, when we look at countries like, say, the people in Iraq, when they went and voted for the first time and they had their finger with the red dot, what is it that Americans cannot, even if it means standing in line for an hour or two, to go and cast your vote is the most basic right that we have, and we're so darn lazy that we don't want to go and stand in line for the polls. We want it easier and easier, and I just wonder why we don't take more pride in actually committing that exercise where you, even if you stand in line for a long time, everywhere else in the world, you know, so many people don't have that right. They don't get to vote, and we as Americans just take so much for granted. I mean, that's kind of been my pet peeve.
Let me get on to something a little bit more important besides that voting.
Okay, because we're almost out of time.
Eligibility. And we're almost out of time. I see it's 7:54. I get. I just wanted to touch on Obama's eligibility because the aspect is I'm very upset with the ballot commissions of each state, especially in New Hampshire, when the debacle that goes on that they didn't verify his birth certificate. And we, you know, I could say this from my understanding. It is a fake and a forgery what Eddie produced. And this man shouldn't be in office. Now, what's your feeling on that?
Well, it's my feeling is that, sir, that that's just not true. That the Republicans did not spend $1 billion trying to defeat this man because he shouldn't have been in office. If they could have proven that he didn't have a birth certificate, he wouldn't be eligible to be president. So these people like Donald Trump who have carried out the birther argument, it's just ridiculous. He's an American citizen as much as I am, Ms. Gomez, or you are. That's my opinion.
Be a natural-born citizen to hold the office? I don't think so.
Yes, he is a natural-born citizen. You have to be a natural-born citizen to hold the office.
His father was a Kenyan subject, a British
so
subject.
What?
He's not a natural-born.
But
so
his
what?
Mother was. And in certain, and let me tell you, you know, that's a big issue here in Arizona with the whole thing of immigration, is whether or not if you're born in the United States and your mother and father are not citizens, does that make you a citizen? And yes, it does.
Yes,
and there's been a lot of arguments, and as people have been very emotional about the fact that these kids or these people are using the system and using so many services that we as American taxpayers pay for. But it is a law. Even if your parents are not citizens, if you are born within the United States, either whether that be Hawaii, Alaska, or I guess Puerto Rico, right, because that is kind of another colony, and within the borders of the United States, you are an American citizen. That's why it's been a controversy why so many, they say, people, the Mexicans flood to the United States so their children can be born in the United States and be citizens and, you know, be able to have the opportunities they wouldn't have in Mexico.
Well, I think we're out of time here, but thank you for calling in. Thank you, Kathleen. I hope that you will join us next week for Shadow Politics. We're excited about this new show. We're obviously getting input already, and we're going to keep track of all this, and hopefully we'll bring some consensus back to the politics of America. Thanks for joining us this week. Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you from here from rural America.
Okay, and we'll see you next Sunday at 7 o'clock.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.